Bienvenidos, damas y caballeros. Welcome back to Freeform Radio on the Freeform Network. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Freeform Network. Send in those questions, ffnquestions@gmail.com. Those have kind of slowed down a little bit. I don't know if people got tired of sending them in, but hey, man, send them in. We'll read them. And, you know, if we get enough of them, we'll probably do a podcast on it. But again, this is Freeform Radio. I am one of your hosts. My name is Daniel. With me today is Noel.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you're doing good.
And Andy.
It's all good, everyone. Hope everybody is coming out of this pandemic better. I told myself I wouldn't talk about my pandemic, but right into it, I said the word pandemic. So I'll try not to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. Today, as of this recording, we're nearing the end of the stay-at-home order. It doesn't look like Pritzker is going to extend it past June 1st or the end of May or whatever, whichever date it was. So, yeah, it looks like things are letting up a little bit. So we'll see how the curve responds, and hopefully everything is well. And hopefully, like Noel and Andy mentioned, everybody's doing well and you know, getting past all this.
But you're going to be able to eat in the parking lot of a restaurant soon, then. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know, man. I actually ordered some TBK to get delivered by Uber Eats.
Damn,
and man, it was good, but it wasn't like eating there good. So yeah, I can't wait till things get back to normal. You can actually eat at restaurants and stuff.
Like, but you want to go in drunk like at 2 a.m, order a burrito,
right,
and cheese fries type of good?
Damn right, man. But jumping into our weeks here. Mr. Andy here was listening to some podcasts, which I think all of us kind of listen to podcasts on and off here. What's this Call Her Daddy? I've never even heard of that. What is that?
So I want to talk about more. I checked it out, but I think the more important thing, everybody in the podcast world, podcast community, podcast sports community, is more talking about it, because this is better than the fucking podcast, the story that's going on in the background. Well, I don't know if you know. I think you might know it, Dan. Noel, you ever heard of Barstool Sports?
No, I don't really know what it is. It sounds familiar, but I'm not sure.
So it started as like a newspaper about gambling and about sports, and evolved into a website.
And, yeah, they have a real good documentary on YouTube with the creation of Barstool Sports, and it all started with one guy, so it's pretty interesting.
Dave
for anybody
Portnoy.
That's interested. Right.
Yeah, I mean, the Prez, and you know, he reviews the pizza one bite and all this. Well, it's a vast entertainment company. I mean, they do sports shows, they do podcasts, they do daily blogging, they have bloggers, daily articles on all aspects, on all platforms. They have their own app. They have a gambling thing. They just partnered up with a gambling thing. But, you know, I mean, Barstool Sports is pretty widely known, I mean, just for their sports. But they have a whole slew of podcasts. They break it down like Barstool Chicago, Barstool fucking Boston, Boston, New York. They got like these little sub groups, and you know, their whole thing is sports. But they the Call Her Daddy podcast is with these two women or two girls, and they signed the deal. They start this podcast called Call Her Daddy, and Dave Portnoy signed them up, and Dave gave them a 3-year deal. I think they were making like $75,000 a year.
So they had a podcast before Dave signed them?
Yeah, they kind of like, I want to say audition. From my understanding, they went to them. They're like, because these girls have potential. So he signed them. He signed the girls. It's Alex and Sophia, I believe. Don't quote me on the names, but they signed a 3-year deal. Portnoy or Barstool owns the trademark, the IP, the intellectual property, the name, anything associated. They struck a deal with merchandise and all this other crap. Well, needless to say, the fucking podcast blew up. They have like millions of thousands, hundreds of thousands of downloads.
What's the topics that they explore?
It's just women shit. Like, they talk about
periods and stuff, or what?
And shit, fucking, and one of them is single. One of them has a boyfriend, and her boyfriend's like the vice president of HBO Sports.
Ah.
Which he plays an important role down the road. But basically, they blow up. They had this Alex. She released the whole timeline on her YouTube channel this over the weekend, and so they Dave Portnoy gave him a raise first year into it and gave him like a bonus. Dude, they went from 75,000 to like I think one of them got like 516,000 a year. You went from 75,000 to half a million a year.
Wow.
And the other one got like 400,000. And so they were blowing up. He's like, man, you guys are doing great. I'm going to give you some more money. Here you go. And they're going into their second year. Meantime, one of the girls is dating this guy, the vice president of HBO Sports. And he goes, man, I reviewed your guys' contracts. You guys are getting fucked. Like, these deals suck. Granted, they just got a fucking raise from 75K to half a million, around half a million each. And he goes, man, you guys are getting fucked here. Like, let me renegotiate for you guys.
Again, literally and figuratively? Because
he's fucking one of them from my understanding. Right. You know, allegedly, I don't know. And one of them's like, all right. The other one is like, eh. But, you know, that's near here or there. But he went and started negotiating, and they started asking for like crazy demands. Both of them, they went in as a team, and they asked for like, we want $1 million each. They want more of the merchandise. They want to own the name Caller Daddy so they can merchandise it out. Because that's the big thing where you own like the property, the intellectual
T-shirts,
you could brand it like fucking books, you know, whatever. You have more chance to make money. You don't have to go into an intermediary. And that was the big contention. Like, we're going to own it. We're going to fucking own it. And the press said, fuck this. Like, who the fuck are you? Like, and then they started going on Twitter talking about how, like, this fucking guy from HBO Sports is like, trying to fuck everything up. And he goes, he went on Twitter, I'm like, I'm not gonna renegotiate. I already gave these girls a deal, honor your contract. So the one girl, she was like, well, I don't know, man, this is a pretty good deal. And the other girl was like, fuck that, we need to get more. And so she was like, we're gonna own the fucking property, we're gonna own the name. We could do whatever the fuck we want with it after this deal is up. You know, once we negotiate, we own it. And she's like, nah, man, we need to make more. We need to make more. And my boyfriend agrees. So I was just like, damn, man. Like, and they're all talking about it on the internet. Like this is fucking insane, man. And like everybody on YouTube and blogs are all talking about it. Like, I can't believe this shit. And people hating, like, bitches, you make $500,000 a year and you're bitching, like, know how, you know, basically just shitting on women, like always wanting more. They don't know when they have it good. And so what it came down to, the one girl refused. She's like, they went into one last meeting with Portnoy, and they called it the rooftop meeting. They went in there, and Dave Portnoy, the president of Barstool, goes, this is the best deal I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you the raise. I'm going to give you, you guys are going to own the property, the intellectual property. I'm giving you this. I'm giving you more advertising. And the one girl's like, fucking sweet. The one that's been wanting to sign. And the other girl's like, nah, this is not acceptable. And they fucking walked away. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, this is all we wanted. Nah, man, we're getting fucked. So they stopped talking. And the one girl fucking left. And the one girl's
that
like
greedy one.
She her and her boyfriend are like, nah, man, this deal sucks. And the one girl's like, man, this is fucking sweet. And she's like, she pulled it on Sunday. She released this video, like a half hour video with the timeline. She goes, I'm gonna fucking sign with Barstool. Sophia ain't, like, I'm going to start doing the show on my own. And then Portnoy said, like, yeah, fuck them. They're going to lose out on this opportunity. Like, I don't play, like, I'm being honest with everybody here. And then today, this morning during my lunch, he tweeted more saying that the guy called in a favor. He had this other fucking, like, super agent call him, and he's like, yeah, this guy's calling me trying to get Sophia, trying to get her back on the deal where she could get at least get 50% of the property. And he's like, man, it's too late. Fuck that. Like, the other girl already signed. Like, that boat has sailed. Like, if you want on your own show, I'll give you your own show, but that boat has sailed. So the one girl walked away, and she ain't getting shit. And The partners, like, they were like, they started this shit together. They're estranged. They haven't talked since that meeting, and it's their friendship. I mean, they were like really great friends, and you know, goes to say, like, the friendship's over. The one girl ain't getting shit, and the one girl, the hardworking one, she's gonna own everything. But who? I guess going forward, how is the show going to be, like, dynamics and chemistry when it's a solo show compared to two people? And that's what everybody's talking about now. Like, is the show going to be the same? Is he going to try to replace her? Because those two together were pretty good. But now when you change dynamic, you know, how the fuck is this going to work? How's the show going to work?
She'll still make her money, though, at least. The one girl that, you know, was cool with it.
Yeah, because, you know, doing podcasts, talking by yourself, it's a little difficult. You know, some people could do it, but you definitely start getting a dynamic with your podcast co-host. So, you know, I don't know if another girl is going to be able to step in. Is it still going to be the same topics? You know, it seems like they had a good rapport, so I wonder how it's going to go forward.
We should send them some of our episodes. Maybe they could we could triple team this bitch. And then maybe we all get on into some of this Barstool money. Or
is she the fine one or the one that was so-so?
No, she's the fine one. She's the blonde. Yeah. Right. She's the one that talks about sucking dick and, like, fucking one-night stands and shit. The other one got a boyfriend, you know? And so, yeah, they've been getting, like, the other shows on the network on Barstool. They're like, yeah, people are trying to fucking audition. We're getting all these requests. And I was just like, man, like, and I started thinking about us, like, man, what happens if we get offered, like, $500,000? Like, are you going to be, is Dan going to be like, peace, I'm out? Or, like, I'm going to be like, fuck that, I want to own this. Or no, I was like, nah, man, but it's about the listeners or some shit. I started thinking about that, but fuck, man, like, and more, you hear more stories on YouTube, like, people with YouTube channels that friends start, and, like, they don't post no more because they're fighting over money, you know? And, like, this guy was like, when you sign a deal like this, you got to prepare yourself. If the show explodes, you got to have some paperwork or something. Because, like, 9 out of 10 times, the shows don't work. But if it does, you don't want to be caught in this situation.
I hear where you're coming from, but I don't think it's good to be greedy. I think if you're getting a good offer like that, you're getting $500,000. You're getting ownership of the rights and, you know,
the name, yeah.
I think that's a very good offer for something that, you know, yeah, it's doing good, but at any point it could just fucking go the opposite direction. There's been many times where shit like that's happened, where it's popular, it's trending, and then it fucking just dies off and it becomes stale or whatever. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, the dynamic of the show is going to change. She is getting paid. She owns the show. But I think she paid a heavy price, because you've seen shows and people and teams split up, and it's never really the same. And I'm intrigued, like, how popular
could be better.
Like,
could be better,
could
man.
Could be better, but, man, you know? You've seen a lot of teams,
fucking
even on radio.
Shawn Michaels, when he left the Rockers, became fucking a heartbreak kid.
Yeah,
worked out good
Mark
for him.
Gennetti, man. Yeah, I'm fucking Shawn Michaels. Ain't nobody throwing me
through the barbershop scene. Throw you through a fucking window.
Oh my god.
So let me just, I got a kind of like a mullet right now, so yeah, I can make that happen, man.
There you go.
Get the I'm surprised Barstool even kept the deal for the one girl that signed.
I mean,
I would have been like, hey, this $500,000 was contingent on both of you being part of the show. Now that the one girl left, there's a lot of unknown, so I'm only going to give you, you know, 50K or whatever it is. I would have renegotiated that half mil contract that they were going to give her.
Well, again, like, she was the one, admittedly, the other girl admits, like, she did the editing, she did all the social media, she's the one that took the pictures, promotion. The other girl was just like a personality. She just came in, recorded, posted a couple things on her Instagram. This other girl, she was the one that was a hustler.
And yeah, so she was the Daniel, and you're the one that signed the Andy that just didn't do nothing except show up.
Man. How dare you, sir, man. I am the personality and the fucking backbone of this fucking network and show. But, yeah, I mean, it kind of brought it back to, like, you know, if we get, you know, we have hundreds of fans, how would this work out? But, just very interesting, man. And like, if you guys just do, you know, YouTube or Google search, Call Her Daddy, Barstool Sports, and it's everybody's talking about it in the podcast world. I mean, I know Barstool Sports is, I'm a follower. I like it. I like watching their daily shows and all that stuff. And I do listen to some of their podcasts. And when I saw this happening last week, I was just like, holy shit. And like, they're just, you know, they're millennials. Portnoy's an older guy. They're just fucking talking about what they're feeling on, you know, they're vlogging it, video blogging it on their YouTube and their Instagrams and all this shit. And they're just being very fucking honest about it. And I was just like, man, it's just going to be interesting that one girl got fucked. And I'm just interested to see where the show goes from here.
Yeah, the only podcast that I listen to from Barstool is the Sports Talk, Pardon My Take.
Yeah.
With Dan Katz. That's the only one that I really listen to. And that's just because Dan Katz is a big Bears fan. So it's funny to listen to him and listen to him rant on about the Bears. But I usually don't listen to the other ones. I know they have a couple different ones.
Yeah, they have a shit ton. Did you see the one where he did it with Jay Cutler?
Yeah, I think you sent me that link. Yeah. I hadn't seen the video. Mm-hmm. So it was real interesting that interview that he did.
And they were talking about, you know, how they're like friends and how they partied and shit. And then how Jay was wearing Barstool Sports T-shirts. And then they talk about a little bit behind the scenes about. They talk about how, you know, they're friends and they need to, you know, it's hard to criticize them and all that, you know, and I found that very interesting.
Yeah, it was a good video for people to go out there and look at, you know, particularly if you're a Chicago fan. It's good to hear from Jay Cutler again. Actually, from seeing that video, it got me interested in just Googling him on YouTube. And the Very Cavalier show, I've never seen it before, but man, that is Jay Cutler from the Bears, the guy that's on that TV show. And it's like kind of funny, you know.
Yeah, but we'll see how it goes then. I see you've been checking out Unashamed with Phil Robinson. What's all that about?
Yeah, that's actually another podcast that I listen to. Unashamed with Phil Robinson. I don't know if you guys know who Phil Robinson is.
That's the guy from Duck Dynasty, right?
Right, right. It's the dad, the oldest guy. And yeah, man, he has a podcast that's actually spiritual. It's a Christian podcast, and they just talk about their daily life events and then they reiterate it into a message about God. And it's, you know, kind of like the TV show. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the Duck Dynasty episodes, Noel.
No, I'm aware of what you're talking about, though. Duck Dynasty, I was aware of the show, and it had like a little bit of a controversy with one of the characters on there, or one of the people on there, I should say.
Yeah, there's been on and off stuff. But even the TV show had like a worship feel at the end of every episode. They would get together as a family and eat dinner and then say a prayer. And then they would give the kind of the G.I. Joe, hey, by doing this, now you know that, you know, you can do that, you know. So it's always like some kind of uplifting message at the end of every episode. So I mean, the episodes on the TV show were kind of goofy. You could tell it was really scripted kind of stuff. So right. It wasn't that great of a TV show, except for the final message. It was good to hear them wrap it up and whatever the day's event were, you know, kind of wind it up in a prayer. But the podcast is a little different. It's a lot more worship. So they do talk about the stuff that happens. Like they were talking about how there was a drive-by. I don't know if you guys saw that in the news about 2-3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. There was a drive-by by one of the houses, because they have like this big lot of land because these guys got buco money. Mm-hmm. So somebody did a drive-by by the main gate, and they were in the news. Well, in the podcast, they talk about it. So they talk about it, and then after that, they come back with a positive message about it. They quote scriptures and talk about it. So I've really been digging it just because these guys, even from the TV show, you could kind of tell that they're good-hearted people. So I've really dug the podcast. I'm not sure if you've heard the podcast, Andy, or...
No, I know about him, but I've never heard of it. I don't recall. I know he's a spiritual. Is he like a pastor or anything?
Yeah, actually. Know? Yeah. Him, the kids, they're all preachers. They all go around. I think that's where they make most of their money nowadays, is they go around guest speaking at different churches and having like a sermon. So and then they have their local church as well that they go and have a sermon there. But a lot of times I've gone to their website, and they have where they go to like different places, and they're like, hey, we're going to be in Jacksonville this week. You know, we're going to be here this week. And so I think that's where they make most of their money. But no, man, the podcast for anybody out there that's looking for something spiritual with really down earth kind of guys, or at least they seem that way. They hunt, they're gun activists. So they're pro gun, and you know they're Christian. So it's a pretty good podcast. I don't know if you, Andy. I don't know. All doesn't really listen to Christian shows, but you, Andy, do you listen to any kind of Christian podcast or anything?
No,
like
I mean
that?
I know we. I've tried. My wife listens more to Joel Osteen. I listen to him once in a while. Lately, during the pandemic, I've been listening to, not podcasts, but I've been watching a lot of stuff by Billy Graham. And he kind of inspires me once in a while. And but
is other he the than one that passed away?
Yeah, he passed away a couple years back. Right. His son still runs the church. But, you know, he counseled presidents, and he went on a lot of crusades around the world and Europe and India and Asia and everywhere, spreading the word. But... he has a bunch of stuff up on YouTube, but I don't think he has anything on podcast. I've never really searched that, but no. For a while, I was listening to Joel Osteen for a little bit, but that's about it.
Right. I wonder how many people during this, you know, epidemic going on right now have turned to God, you know, for some kind of guidance or some kind of, you know, reassurance that everything's going to be okay. Because that's typically when a lot of people start looking at him to try to get some answers or try to get, you know, some comfort if shit's, you know, hitting the fan.
No, yeah, I think a lot of people did.
Does it make you guys feel better when you guys go to mass or when you listen to this podcast? Do you come out of it with, like, I don't know, a better feeling towards God or something?
I think it's more like it reaffirms a lot of what your beliefs, especially when there's a positive message with it, it really just like reactivates and, you know, re-solidifies your beliefs. So I, you know, this isn't the only one that I listen to. I listen to another one called Our Daily Bread, and it's a daily podcast that's really short. I mean, it's like typically like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. 3 minutes the most, and it's just a positive message telling you something about a quick scripture, and then they talk for a few minutes, and it's a really quick podcast that is, you know, something to, you know, keep a good habit, just because, you know, sometimes we take a break and kind of take a lax as far as praying daily and stuff like this. So every time I open up my podcast app and I see that daily bread, it just reminds me, like, hey, let me give, you know, Jesus, you know, 5 minutes of my time, listen to this podcast and just put my head in the right place. So, yeah, Unashamed with Phil Robinson is something I just started listening to a couple months ago, and I really dug it so far. It's a really good podcast. They have a lot of advertising, so my feeling is, you know, they monetize, you get, you know, money from doing these shows and then from all the sponsors, because they usually have like two or three sponsors every podcast. So take it for what it is, you know.
Yeah. Jason David Frank, I don't know if you guys know who that is. He's the Green Ranger on Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, yeah.
He does some of that stuff too. Like, he'll do like talks and, you know, sometimes just short clips. And I think he's a Christian man as well. He'll do like some scriptures and stuff. So yeah, it's pretty cool to see some of that stuff out there. Just some positive vibes for everyone.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah. Most of when I do search that out, I need some, I need to be like some uplift, you know, lift my spirits and like have more of a, be more spiritually awakened. And yeah, it does make you feel good. When you listen to anybody talk about, you know, about spiritual, I mean, in general, I think, but, it makes me feel better. It calms me down.
Right. Right. So yeah. For people out there looking for a podcast, tune into Call Your Daddy and hear about fucking, or tune into Unashamed Phil Robinson and get some Jesus.
What a contrast.
Yeah, I know, man. But yeah, there's stuff for everybody. I mean, I'm sure Call Your Daddy is a pretty good podcast. You know, that kind of keeps it to more maybe like a younger audience, and where Unashamed is probably like a more mature audience or people that are, you know, spiritually maybe developed and they want to just continue their, you know, their walk with Jesus. But the other thing that I wanted to bring up was that I finished watching the documentary. It's like a mini series, The Most Dangerous Animal of All. I'm not sure if you guys heard of that.
No,
it's called Humans.
Right. And it is a human, actually. It's about the Zodiac Killer.
Oh, shit. That yeah. is cool. I like the movie.
Yeah, the Zodiac Killer movie. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And I've always been kind of fascinated with his lore, his, you know, just like his story of the Zodiac Killer, just because he eluded police for so long. This documentary, what it's about is that there's a guy a little older than me and Andy, and he believes that the Zodiac Killer is his dad. So...
I think I heard about this.
So this documentary, what it goes into like a brief thing about the Zodiac Killer, you get kind of a synopsis of that. And then it starts off with how this guy, because he was abandoned or he was left for adoption or something like that. So he never knew who his parents were. So the reason why he thinks the Zodiac Killer is that is because he started searching at an older age. I got to find my parents kind of thing. And he found his mom. And then from conversations with the mom, she dated one of the suspects that, you know, the Zodiac Killer. So it's a pretty cool documentary, man, especially if you're into that kind of Zodiac Killer kind of stuff. At the end of it, you kind of are left with, is this true? Is it not? And the last episode actually goes into like rewind and kind of contradicts or kind of, you know, gives you like the opposite view of the entire miniseries. So it gives you a lot to think about. So it gives you all the points that why is he his dad? Why is he his dad? You know, the first, I forgot how many episodes it was, but let's say it's six episodes. The first five is just why is he the dad? And then the last episode, this is the reason why it might not be his dad. And it was really cool because usually when you listen to or view documentaries, it's really one-sided. So it's like just shoving it down your throat and just kind of telling you this is the truth. This is the truth. And you don't really get to hear a lot of the opposite side. So it was really cool.
No,
go ahead.
No, just real quick. Do they actually speak with the dad? Do you actually get to like see him talking?
Well, I think the suspect, the Zodiac killer, I think he passed away.
I don't know who it is yet. That's what I was going to say. I don't think they ever identified who it was. There's been a lot of people that suspect a certain people.
Right.
But I don't think he's ever really been identified.
Yeah, they caught. Have. Right. They have strong suspicions as to who they are or who was the Zodiac killer. So everything is conjecture. You know, you really don't know because the guy's not alive. But they do have some like DNA samples and other stuff. So it gets really interesting. And this guy, he even gets like help from like a detective or some kind of like a journalist. She's like an investigative journalist. So she is brought into the mix and kind of tries to corroborate this guy's story. And it just is really interesting. It's really fascinating how this guy started piecing it together. And he's kind of like obsessive compulsive. He's like, the hell with my existing family. Let me find out if this one guy is my dad kind of thing. And he's so consumed with it that everything else is pushed off to the side. I think the whole time he was searching for his dad, he got divorced like twice or something like that. That's how much he was so stuck into, is the Zodiac killer my dad? So pretty good documentary for documentary heads out there that like to, you know, watch documentaries or in particular about the Zodiac killer. So something cool to definitely check out for all you people out there.
Is this on Netflix or Amazon or where? How'd you see this?
You know, I forget. Right now I got Hulu, Amazon, and Netflix, so I can't remember which one it was on. Okay. It's on one of those. It's actually made by the company, so I want to say it was Netflix where I saw it, but to be honest, I can't quite recall. I'd have to Google it to check it out. But yeah, The Most Dangerous Animal of All. It's a mini documentary. Really, really cool. I really dug it a lot. But jumping into your week, Noel, I guess you were trying to finish all the Resident Evil games. That's a lot of games, man. How long do you think it's going to take you to finish them all, and how's it going?
Well, I'm about halfway through. When I say I'm trying to finish all the Resident Evil games, I've already beaten a good number of them way back, but I was just kind of playing the new ones. So I beat the first one. I beat Resident Evil Zero on GameCube. I beat Resident Evil 2 on PlayStation 1, Resident Evil 3 on PlayStation 1. And then I finally beat the remake of 2 and 3 on PC. And then I replayed 1 and 0, beat those. So now I'm on 4. I already almost beat number 5. I haven't played 6 or 7. So I got about 3 or 4 games to get through before number 8 comes out. I think it's going to be in the next year or so. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to in terms of Resident Evil. It was kind of cool playing number 2, like the new version that was released barely last year for right, PS4. I played on PC, and dude, it looks fucking great. It looks phenomenal. And it really got me sucked into the world. And I had fun exploring everywhere and just seeing everything, because it pops out. And when you compare it to the original one that I played, actually was an N64, a Nintendo 64. Man, it's like night and day. I still respect the original, but the new one, man, they really did it well.
Right, yeah, the original was a great game. I remember playing Resident Evil 1 for the first time. It was my first experience to PlayStation, actually, because before that, you know, we were Nintendo kids, and that's all we really had in the house, and I want to say it was Saul's friend that brought over a PlayStation. I think it was Mario. He brought over the PlayStation, and then we just started playing. And one of the first games that I ever saw was Resident Evil, and it was really good, man. It was like something I've never seen before. I was just used to Mario and cartoony graphics. And when I played that first Resident Evil, it was something else.
Oh, yeah. Now, survival horror is definitely, when you think of survival horror, you think of Resident Evil and games like Silent Hill. All that came out on PlayStation, so it was really cool to see the new Resident Evil. And number three, I just beat as well, and it was really cool. A lot of people
shitting on it.
Yeah, and you know what, man? A lot of people, they can all go to hell, to be honest with you on that.
Damn.
Well, like, they're shitting on something. Well, all right, the only valid reason they have to shit on it is the price. For $60, you could have gotten more content. It is a short game for $60. I personally, because when I grew up, a lot of you guys bought the games. I didn't have to buy anything. So technically, out of all the games I've you know, beat in Resident Evil series, like, this is one of the first few that I've actually purchased full price with my own money, not like going halvesies with one of my brothers or something like that. So I didn't feel bad paying $60. I felt like I owed it to Resident Evil for all the fun that they've given me. But I could see why a lot of other people were shitting on that. They're like, you took out hours of content just to fucking release it sooner. To me, it was a cool game. I enjoyed it from start to finish. So, I mean, people that shit on it, people are becoming really snobby, man. I just see it. It's getting worse and worse. People just want the whole fucking world for nothing, you know, for just, you know, $20 or whatever. It's a fucking awesome game. Now, $60, yeah. Probably a little more than what you want to spend, but it's still good.
Right. So, I played Resident Evil 2, the remake. I did not play part 3, so I'm not really sure how well that is. But Resident Evil 2, the remake, was awesome, man. That was awesome. It was just like remade so perfectly. And, you know, I played the original, so I did have some kind of like feeling as to this is the way it should be. And when I saw that it was made differently and it's got like a different way to play it, I was kind of skeptical. I was just like, man, I don't know if this is going to be any good. But man, it was an awesome game. I really dove really deep into that and I played everything. I got almost all the trophies for it. So it was a really cool game. But yeah, Resident Evil 3, since the majority of the game is online, I didn't really care for that too much, so I didn't pick that one up. Did you try any of the online stuff?
You know, I haven't gotten to it. Resident Evil Resistance, it comes with that, but I haven't actually played it yet. Now, you said most of the game is online. Now, you do realize you get the full story of Resident Evil 3 offline as well, right?
Yeah. Well, like you had mentioned, a lot of the criticism was that some events from the original Resident Evil 3 were cut off. So the main storyline for Resident Evil 3 is a trimmed version from the original. But they kind of fill in with that with this online, with this Resident Evil Resistance online package where, you know, one person plays as the tyrant or something, and then the other group of people play as the survivors. And it's kind of like a, what do they call those, PvPs, or I forget.
Isn't
what they
it like
call those.
Dead by Daylight? Isn't that kind of a similar game?
Right. Yeah, it's a group of people versus one overpowered person. So you got to use stealth, you got to build traps, and do a bunch of other goofy stuff to try to kill this one overpowered guy. But yeah, I didn't pick it up just because of that. I'm not really a big online player, so I didn't pick up part 3, but part 2 was awesome.
Yeah, I would say once part 3 drops down in price, where it's more reasonable for you, you should definitely try it out. From what I remember, and it's difficult to remember everything that happened in the original number 3 when I played on PlayStation, but from what I was reading and kind of remember, they took out a clock tower scene or a clock tower segment of the game.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that area. I can't really remember very well, but yeah, there was a whole thing about a clock tower, and you never actually get to do too much with it, and it's unfortunate because, yeah, a lot of people wanted to see that part and all that. But I still thought it was cool, you know, the gunfighting, the weapons you get to use, the fucking Nemesis dude, all that shit was really cool. It was well done. Graphics were awesome. You really felt like a lot of passion went into into the game, despite, you know, might be missing a few things. What was done well, in my opinion. And yeah, I've also been doing a lot of emulation recently. So originally I was going to buy a PS2 and then a PS3 so I can do some backwards, you know, compatibility stuff. But it just seems way too expensive. Right now on eBay, people are fucking just savages selling everything for like $500 more than what it should be.
I know the PS3, the one that's backwards compatible with the PS2, those go for a pretty penny. They're not cheap.
So I was like, should I just emulate, you know? And I was talking to my cousin, who he pretty much emulates everything, you know. He has like a huge media center set up and like the whole nine yards. It has all this like images and organization and shit. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do it to that extent, but I'm at least going to try to like dip my foot in the pool and see what I can do with my computer, my setup. And I was shocked. Like, it worked great, dude. It worked phenomenally. I've been doing PS2 and GameCube so far. And I got my PS2 library up to like 80 something games.
Wow.
Yeah.
How it's like huge are that? The whole files. How many games is that?
So it varies because you know how DVDs can fit up to 4.6. Mm-hmm. So not every game utilizes the whole disc. So it's going to range from like NBA Street will probably be like a gig and a half, and God of War will probably be like 7 gigs. You know what I mean? So. Damn. Yeah, it ranges. Depends on the game and when it came out.
Dual layered and stuff, yeah.
I'll tell you, my library is about almost 300 gigs of just PS2 games. But I got some jams here, man. I got Dark Cloud, Devil May Cry series. I got God of War series, Grand Theft Auto 3, San Andreas, Vice City, Legacy of Kain, Mercenaries, Metal Gears, I got the Midway Classics, the arcade classics, NBA Streets.
You need some NFL Blitz up in there, man.
I got NFL Blitz Pro.
That's a classic.
Need for Speed Underground, NBA Streets, Resident Evils, Shinobi. I got a Silent Hills, Sega Master Collection, Sonic. I got a bunch of stuff, dude. And the GameCube one, that's the one I've been doing most recently. I'm actually still filling up this library, getting all the Legends of Zeldas, the Mario Parties, all that shit. And what I'm really excited for, I just started playing it yesterday, and I'm like, I'm hyped. I'm really hyped for this one because I never played it when I had the GameCube. And I feel foolish because the GameCube was a solid system, but I underappreciated it back in the day. And I did have a lot of games for it, but I didn't have all these good games. I never had any Metroid Prime games, never had the Star Fox games, and the one that I'm super hyped to play, finally, the Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes Edition.
Man, that's a good one.
Yeah, the first Metal Gear Solid in HD quality, and I'm up converting it to 4K to match my monitor, and I put all these filters and shit. It looks, it looks great.
Yeah, it's a good-looking game to begin with. It's kind of got like that Resident Evil remake kind of vibe where if you compare it to the original and then compare it to the Twin Snakes version for GameCube, it's a big jump in graphics.
I thought Metal Gear Solid was a Sony exclusive, like in the PlayStation stuff. I didn't know they made one for the GameCube.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, and surprisingly, GameCube, they have a lot of, like, Sony stuff on there. They have all the Resident Evils, pretty much. They have 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4 on GameCube. And right. I was, like, shocked.
When GameCube first started, they purchased a lot of exclusives. Like, those Resident Evils, the first two... No, I'm sorry, the remakes were, like, exclusives to GameCube. And they paid for a lot of Beautiful Joe, or I forget what the...
Yeah, Beautiful Joe.
Beautiful Joe, that was an exclusive. They had like a contract with Capcom. And even Resident Evil 4, which is the big one, supposedly, because it revolutionized how Resident Evils are made. And you kind of see that formula even in the newer ones, like 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, have like that Resident Evil 4 vibe. Well, that started in GameCube. But you're right, Noel. GameCube to me is an awesome system. I still got my GameCube, and I got Twin Snakes. I got the Metroid Primes. I got Zeldas. I got all those games, man, and it's great. I still got it connected to my TV, actually. Well, I don't got the cable connected, but I have it in my entertainment system. And then every now and then when I get an itch, I just plug it in and start playing, because that GameCube library, it's got some really good gems in there.
Yeah. Yeah, looking back on it now, like, I really undervalued it when I had it. But, you know, I was a kid. You know, I wasn't really, like, that aware of what was going on, I guess, in terms of the gaming world as much as I am now. I'm a little bit more, I guess, up to date on the news and stuff. And, yeah, speaking of news, this is kind of time to get into the article for this week. So we got this article here. It's an environmental article. You can get it at getpocket.com, although it comes from TED Ideas, and we'll leave the link in there in our description. So the title of this article is, "This tower sucks up smog and turns it into diamonds." The caption reads, "In one of the world's most polluted cities, there's a futuristic tower that sucks up smog, turns it into clean air, and filters out the smog particles so they can be turned into diamonds." So I don't know if you guys had a chance to read a little bit on this. Kind of goes into detail about this Dutch artist who, you know, he had a lot of research into just the pollution that's on in the world, and in Beijing specifically, and how Beijing has 8-year-olds in the city diagnosed with lung cancer because the air is just so polluted, and it reduces the life expectancy of the residents in the nearby areas by almost 20 years. So this guy, his name is Don Rosengard. He says the future is not bright for what we envision here. And he says that this is pretty much horrible, the conditions that we're living in. So he decided to make this thing. It's called a smog-free tower. It's a tower that he set up in Rotterdam, Beijing, Tianjin, and Dalian. Not sure where those two other locations are, but Rotterdam is in Amsterdam. Beijing is in China. And it pretty much cleans up the air. It sucks up 30,000 cubic meters of polluted air per hour, cleans it to the nano level, and it goes into detail the different particles it cleans. And it just runs in the background. It cleans, I think, about like a couple of mile radius, but it does make the area a lot cleaner to be around. So what do you guys think about all this?
I thought it was super cool, man, especially with everything going on with the epidemic. You're hearing more and more about tech that will be able to suck up the air, clean it, and then spit it back out, so that airports, I heard just recently, actually, that airports are trying to look into technology that will suck up the air, zap it with some type of ultraviolet rays or something, and then spit it back out, so that way the air gets clean and a lot of germs and, you know, everything is to a certain percentage, just like this article mentions, you know, the PMs, 2.5, you know, particles and stuff like that. So they're talking about tech like this. So it's really interesting to see that these towers actually visibly make everything. It says 55 to 75% cleaner than the rest of the city. So it's really interesting, this new tech.
Yeah, it's amazing what human ingenuity looks like, because we can create stuff to make things better, and new technologies, you know, and, you know, things powered by solar turns everything it pulls out of the air into diamonds, and you know, it's pretty cool. When I first saw the picture of it, I'm like, this looks like a fucking windmill. Then you read the guy who created it's a Dutch guy, so I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And yeah, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, later in the article, he talks about he wants to put it in Delhi and, you know, in India. So it's gonna be interesting to see how far that he can go with this. And I'm kind of shocked the Chinese let him put this up there, because they're not known for being you know, eco-friendly. So, but yeah, it's pretty cool, man. And it is filtering out a lot of air. It's cleaning the air up, because yeah, the right, it hits you right in the face with when you got like 8 years old have been diagnosed with lung cancer. So it's hopefully that, you know, it sounds like that thing he put in there is definitely improving the air.
Yeah, dude, you got to give it up for the people of the Netherlands, dude. They do have some interesting tech out there. I don't know if you guys know, but in the Netherlands, they built this canal. So they had like a city pretty much that should be overrun by water, but because of the canals that they built, they're able to, to live in this area that's usually overflowing with water. Kind of like New Orleans does. And so yeah, the Netherlands, man, just coming out with good tech to clean the world up. When I saw this and was reading it, I was pretty intrigued. I was on my lunch break and checking it out. It looks like they're even able to convert the whatever pollution they gather. They figured that it's mostly carbon, or at least almost half of it is carbon. So they're able to compress this to actually make diamonds, artificial diamonds, that is. And so these are, I assume that they have practical applications, like. You can make it in a ring, sure, but I don't think that's the ultimate goal. I think most likely they're going to use it for like tools and materials, things that you would use diamonds, like, cutters and blades and stuff like that. Maybe even lasers, who knows? But yeah, it's just an interesting thing. He's looking to partner up with governments, students, tech companies, NGOs, just to kind of get this expanding. Looks like they're going to go to India next. And this article is actually a little older, so it's a couple years old. So I'm actually curious to see if they have actually gone to India already. I'm going to look into that and maybe post an update on this article. But it'd be interesting to see this go into all the major cities, Los Angeles, New York, even here in Chicago. Although I don't think we've ever really had smog issues over here.
That's in California, it's a big issue to this day. I know with what we're just going through, people are like, oh, look at the less people activity, less people going out, brought a lot of things back, water got cleaner and all this other crap. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see. Like I said, this it looks pretty simple. I mean, I just interesting. I want to know what kind of filters he's using and stuff, because I wouldn't mind putting that for like my furnace here, and turn my that crap into diamonds, but yeah, it's pretty cool, man. Like I said, human ingenuity, this stuff is, I like to, it always amazes me what humans can do when you put the mind their mind to it, and that's both good and bad, because like Danny's earlier show, we are the fucking deadliest animal, so we have nobody other that could overtake us except ourselves and our minds. So yeah, it's pretty good, man. It's pretty cool. The diamond that do show here, which is kind of interesting, it's like clear and then it has like this black square in the middle. I don't know if that's like the crap before they couldn't transform or compress to turn it into a complete diamond.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Maybe that could be the residue that's not carbon. Maybe that's like filler material. I don't know.
And it's cool because the towers are, I think, like Andy mentioned, solar powered, so it's really low impact into the power grid. And I was Googling earlier. These things don't cost too much, man. It's really about $60,000 to build one of these towers. So to me, that is kind of a low cost for having that much of an impact to reduce the pollution in that area. So yeah, I could see these popping up, and they could subsidize some of the costs with these diamonds, which granted they're not like super clear diamonds, the kind of stuff that you go pick up from Rogers and Hollins. But it's definitely something that, hey man, for them guys trying to get them diamonds at Kmart, you could pick one of these up and it'd be a cheaper cost if there's even Kmarts anymore.
I don't think they're anymore. They've gone the way of the dodo bird. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what else we could come up with. Because you see all sorts of stuff on social media, how they clean up the ocean and like they got these long nets and these things that sucks plastic out. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff we are, especially in America, where we dispose, we just get rid of shit and we just throw everything out. I forgot what it's called. There's a name for disposable people or something, or economy or something. We just constantly just keep buying shit because I guess we don't put a value on a lot of shit no more. But
Looking
you
right
know,
now with all the gloves and the masks that people are
yeah.
using for the COVID, you see pictures all the time of the shit's just in the streets. People just throw shit in the streets and, you know, have no respect for, you know, throwing their garbage out in garbage cans.
Yeah, dude, you'd be surprised how much shit, like, gets thrown out. And even at, like, retail stores, restaurants. When, I don't know, when you worked at Best Buy, did you guys ever throw out any of the stuff, like, that didn't sell or whatever?
No, typically, whenever something wouldn't sell, they would ship it back to the corporate warehouse or whatever, some kind of warehouse place. So every now and then, we would get lists of, like, non-moving inventory, and we would have to find it, pack it, and then send it back to corporate. But no, they didn't really throw away too much. You know, even TVs that didn't sell, like older models, they would just, you know, knock the price off and then sell it at a lower cost. But yeah, they hardly ever threw anything away. I could imagine restaurants, on the other hand, when you go to a TBK and if they have burritos that didn't sell for some reason because people are crazy, then I would imagine they would throw them away.
I'm shocked. No, you've never seen the people that go dumpster diving at the malls and in the shopping centers. Have you seen those videos? Like people go to like GameStop, the Best Buy, yeah. Office Max, and they're finding all this crap. And I always wondered, why did they throw it out? Is it like a return, or is it just they've had it for years and it's never going to get sell? Like, or is I figured like they're returns. And then I haven't seen one video where they throw away like shoes. And but what the store did, they would cut the lip off the shoe, you know, like the no one can use it. I'm like, man, what assholes? They're throwing it away, but they're making sure nobody just goes in there and takes it either.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's a tactic, man. It's definitely a tactic. There was a comedian that made a joke about that. His dad would do the same thing. They had a couch that they were trying to sell in a garage sale, mm-hmm. and nobody bought it. And they're like, well, we gotta throw it out. So he's like, hey, get the saw out. He's like, what? Why are you going to get a saw? He's like, if it wasn't good enough to buy him a garage sale, it ain't good enough to pick up off my fucking trash. Cut it down the middle. And I was cracking up, just reminding me of that.
But yeah, maybe it's company policies that they can't resell it. Because, you know, even at the company that I work at, I know that when I was in the parts department, there would be stuff that we would expect back. But it might be electronics, and to send it back to get tested and certified, it would be too much of a cost that it wouldn't be worth it. So it was cheaper to just, you know, throw it in the dumpster for this sensor instead of sending it to get tested and find out if it is faulty or not. So maybe there's a policy similar to that.
Well, when I worked in a retail store, we would throw away on a weekly basis a decent amount of shit, like probably almost $1,000 worth of merchandise every week that wouldn't sell. And it made up a bunch of different stuff. It wasn't electronics necessarily, but it was like software, books, and pens and pencil supplies and shit like that. But we just threw a lot of it out, and it was like in its original box. Like it wasn't like it was, you know, torn and thrown on the floor, so now we got to throw it away. It was like, no, it just didn't sell. So boom. All these packages in the garbage. And there'd be some times I'd be like, yo, can I take some of this? Like, this is like, I could use this for school or whatever. No, I had some cool managers. I actually knew them outside of work too. So it was all cool. They would, within reason, you know, I wouldn't take like stuff that we're not throwing away. But if we're throwing it away in the garbage, they're like, yeah, man, fuck it, you know?
Yeah, there was one video I saw where this guy goes through like all those department store dumpsters, and he found like a stack of gift cards and rubber bands. And he would literally, I mean, it had to be like 50 to 100. And he would like, well, sometimes the cashiers get confused and they just throw the cards in there and they forget. And he would go and physically go to this website and check how much money. Some of them had like a penny, a quarter, a dollar. Once in a while, he hit like a jackpot. One had like $30 or something, and he'd be like, "Yeah, it was worth it." See, then he just go buy some shit. I'm like, I don't know, man. And like, someday he would go through that whole hundred, and he might have like $5, all in like loose change, you know, change that accumulated.
Yeah, I remember when Efren used to work for McDonald's when he was a teenager. Oh, man, it was awesome. He'd come home with chicken nuggets, like 100 chicken nuggets, and some Big Macs that didn't sell. And I would be like, hell yeah, man. Some Mickey D's.
Nah, for real. That must be nice working at a restaurant because you get like all that free food and shit. But yeah, yeah, I mean,
Yeah, when I worked at the pizzeria, when I was a youngins, washing pots and pans, man, the leftover French fries and pizza pups that wouldn't sell, boom, man, I'd be taking me home. And the lady knew that I liked that kind of food, you know, all that greasy shit when I was young. So she'd be like, hey, we didn't sell this Italian beef. Do you want to take it home? And I'd be like, yeah, sure. You know, and I'd take all that extra food home. It was great.
You're like, I ain't going to make it home. You start eating it right there.
Right.
Nah, yeah, good times, man. Good times for sure. All right. Well, hey, that is the end of our episode for today. That wraps things up. We want to thank you so much for joining us on the Freeform Network. If you're not already, you better follow us on Facebook, Freeform Network, or Twitter at FFR Podcast. And if you have any questions, suggestions, we haven't had any recently, but we hope you guys are going to send them in. The email to drop them off is ffnquestions@gmail.com. Really quick, want to give a shout out to Joe Rogan. He's been in the news recently.
Yeah.
He's made $100 million with the Spotify deal, moving away from YouTube. And we are also on Spotify, so hopefully you guys can check us out there when you guys take a look at Joe Rogan stuff. And from Freeform Radio, I am Noel. We have Daniel here.
Yes, sir. Everybody stay safe. We're almost around the corner with this, so hopefully things will get back to normal soon.
And we got Andy.
It's all good, and we'll check you guys out next time.
We wish you a great night and a beautiful tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
Dad.